It's your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC for 20 great years has the best OTR on our live streaming. And continue tuning in to the Radio Book Channel, along with the RTC Music Channel, all at oldtimeradiolisten.com.
Welcome back to the RTC Weekly Download. We have three good shows for you this week, so I hope you can listen to the whole thing. We're going to go out west to start off with. It's off to Dodge City and Matt Dillon with Gunsmoke.
Gunsmoke, brought to you by L&M Filters. This is it. L&M is best, stands out from all the rest. Around Dodge City and in the territory on West, there's just one way to handle the killers and the spoilers, and that's with a U.S. Marshal and the smell of gun smoke. Gunsmoke, starring William Conrad. The transcribed story of the violence that moved west with young America. And the story of a man who moved with it.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal. The first man they look for and the last they want to meet. It's a chancy job, and it makes a man watchful. And a little lonely. It happened on the way back to Dodge from a trip to a straggling little settlement to the southeast called Medicine Lodge. That country was a lot different from the flat prairie land around Dodge City. Down there, it was dotted with buttes and hills of gypsum and red shale, and it was cut by narrow, winding canyons. It was kind of pretty, too, and we were in no hurry, so every few hours, we stopped and got down into the shade of some little hill and had ourselves a smoke or two.
I don't understand it, Mr. Dillon.
Understand what, Chester?
Well, Ship, if the Santa Fe Railroad had to start a town like Dodge at all, why didn't they do it down here? This country ain't at all boresome.
I agree with you, Chester.
Well, there's one thing, though. This is better outlaw country. A man can keep out of sight mighty easy among these hills.
Oh, that reminds me.
What?
So can an animal. I saw some antelope tracks headed toward the other side of this hill. I just might sneak up there and have a look.
We could sure do with some fresh meat.
Yeah.
What rifle did you bring, Mr. Dillon?
Springfield 45.
Well, that'll take care of anything within 1,000 yards.
Providing I hit it.
If you can't, just give me a yell. I'll come help you. Good hunting.
Not an antelope in sight. Hey.
Hey! Mr. Dillon? What's going on up there?
Somebody was shooting at me, Chester.
What? He hit you?
No.
Well, can you see him?
If I could, I'd have had a bullet in him.
You didn't see him at all?
Well, I saw the smoke from his rifle.
Well, then maybe you hit him.
And if I didn't, it came awful close.
Can I take a look now?
No, you better stay where you are.
What was he shooting at you for, Mr. Dillon?
Well, I'll ask him when we get close enough, Chester. I know where he was. We'll skirt that hill to our left there and come up on his flank. I don't like getting bushwhacked. Well, that's where he was, Chester, behind that clump of beard grass there.
Well, he sure ain't there now.
Yeah, I guess I didn't hit him after all.
I don't see no sign of blood.
No, but we can track him anyway. You ride to one side and I'll follow his trail.
All right, sir.
You yell out if you see anything at all, Chester.
Yes, sir, I sure will.
Oh, here's where he had his horse. I don't know. No, by heaven, those are mule tracks.
Hey, look. Beyond them trees there, Mr. Dillon. There's a little stream over there.
Yeah. That's big enough to hide his tracks. All he has to do is ride down the middle of it.
Well, you can follow along one bank and I'll take the other. He's got to come out of the water someplace.
Well, how are we going to tell if he's headed upstream or down?
I never thought of that.
Now, here's where he went under the water, Chester. I'll go over and see if he rode straight across.
Wait a minute, Mr. Dillon.
What?
Come on down here.
Yeah, what is it?
Well, look at them tracks, Mr. Dillon. He come out of the water right here.
Now, what was he doing riding downstream 100 yards? All that did was slow him up.
Oh, he's crazy. Anybody riding a mule must be crazy.
Well, he can't be too far ahead of us, Chester. Let's get him.
This is it, L&M Filters.
It stands out from all the rest.
Miracle tip, much more flavor.
L&M's got everything.
It's the best.
L&M is best. Stands out from all the rest. L&M's got everything.
Everything?
Everything.
Best flavor?
L&M stands out for flavor. The miracle tip draws easy. Lets you enjoy all the taste.
Best filter?
L&M stands out for effective filtration. No filter compares with L&M's pure white miracle tip for quality or effectiveness.
Best tobaccos?
Highest quality tobaccos. Low nicotine tobaccos. L&M tobaccos. Light and mild. Every way, L&M is best. Stands out from all the rest.
How easy they draw. How mild they are.
L&M is sweeping the country. It's America's best filter tip cigarette.
For a half a mile or so, we had no trouble tracking him. But then he started up along the side of a low hill that was mostly shale. And since his mule was unshod, his trail became almost impossible to follow. We lost it over and over again. And I had to get down and move along a foot or two at a time in order to pick it up. But finally, some tracks led down into the soft dirt. And a couple of miles further on, we spotted a little cabin.
Looks like he ain't nothing but a nester, Mr. Dillon.
Well, he handles a rifle better than any nester I ever saw.
Yes.
We better go on foot from here, Chester. Mm-hmm.
Ain't no sign of nobody. He's probably inside, waiting for us.
Well, he hasn't shot at us yet. Let's chance it, huh? I'll walk right up there.
Okay. There's a corral out back beyond that wagon, Mr. Dillon.
Yeah.
There's his mule. Just stuck his head up.
Well, then there must be somebody home.
I hope they don't come out shooting.
How do you do, ma'am?
What do you want?
We're looking for your husband. Is he home?
We don't know who people are out here, mister.
My name's Dillon, and this Chester Proudfoot.
How do, ma'am?
Never heard of you.
We're strangers here.
This ain't a good place to be, mister. You better keep riding.
We gotta talk to your husband first,
ma'am. Who are you jawing with, Liza?
Well, there's a couple of strangers standing here, Mr. Peavy.
We got nothing for strangers.
They want to talk to you.
Get him away from the door. I'll come outside and talk to him.
Mr. Peavy said to get away from the door.
All right, man.
He's coming out now.
You stay here, Liza, and keep Paul out of the way, too.
I want to see what's going on.
Go back to your room, Pa.
You carry that rifle like a Blue Ridge Mountain man, Mr. Dillon?
Yeah.
My wife says you want to talk to me.
What about?
Your name's Peavy?
Albin Peavy.
I'm Matt Dillon, Peavy.
It don't mean nothing to me.
I'm a lawman, U.S. Marshal.
That don't mean nothing to me neither.
We tracked you here, Peavy, you and your mule.
Tracked me? What for?
Because I don't like getting shot at.
I don't know what you're talking about, Marshal, but I ain't proud to have you standing here in front of my cabin and putting blame on me.
I said we tracked you here.
What difference does that make? I didn't do no shooting and you can't prove I did. If I was you, I'd clear out and leave people to their own business.
You try to kill a man and then you get mad when he complains about it, huh?
Why should I try to kill you? It don't make sense to kill a man you don't even know. I never shot at a man without cause in my life, and that's the truth.
Anything else you want to tell me?
No. Except to leave me alone.
All right. Come on, Chester.
Well, Mr. Dillon, you can't let him get...
Come on, I said.
Yes, sir. We just gonna ride off and let him get by with this, Mr. Dillon?
We're gonna ride off, Chester, but we'll be back in the morning. We'll be back every day for a week if we have to.
Corral's empty, Mr. Dillon. And his wagon's gone, too.
Oh, maybe Ms. Peavy's inside. Let's tie our horses here, Chester.
All right, sir.
She might even give us some coffee.
Well, these Peavys ain't exactly the most hospitable folks I ever come across.
Well, maybe they'll improve when they get used to us.
More likely they'll shoot us first.
Wait a minute, Chester.
What?
Over there, coming around that hill.
It's Peavy's wagon. But who's that driving them mules?
That's a woman. Probably Miss Peavy.
Where do you suppose they've been?
Out shooting strangers, probably.
Well, they'd be better off if they spent their time fixing this place up some. It's going plumb to ruin.
Yeah, Peavy's got other things on his mind, Chester.
Yeah, he sure has.
He acts like a man riding shotgun, doesn't he?
Fancy letting his woman do all the work.
Get down, Liza. They'll stand.
Morning, Peavy. Ma'am.
I thought I told you to leave us alone.
You did.
Then what are you doing back?
Well, I thought you might be a little more friendly than you were yesterday. I guess I was wrong.
I ain't got time to be friendly.
No?
Marshal, I'll tell you straight out so you won't get any wrong ideas. There's a man in that wagon.
What?
He's dead. Shot dead. And we're gonna bury him now.
Well, who is he?
His name don't matter. But I didn't shoot him. You can go look if you want. He's been dead most a day now.
Well, what are you doing with him?
I found him laying out there, so as I got the wagon and brought him in, I'm going to bury him.
You're going to a lot of trouble, Peavy. Why?
I found a man laying dead on the ground. I ain't going to ride off and leave him there.
Where did you find him?
Out that way a few miles. What difference it make?
None, maybe. You want some help?
We don't need no help, Marshal.
All right, we'll leave you to your work. Let's get our horses, Chester. We rode off in the opposite direction the Peavys had come, made a circle, and picked up their wagon tracks about a half a mile from the cabin. It was an easy trail to follow, and an hour later we found the spot where they'd picked up the body. It proved what I'd suspected all along. So we turned around and rode back toward the Peavy cabin. We were about a mile from it when we saw an old man and a woman ahead of us, both armed and both riding mules.
Well, they've seen us, Mr. Dillon. They're stopping.
Good.
They don't look none too friendly neither, do they?
And nobody does around here. Hello?
He won't even wave.
Hello?
Who are you?
I'm a U.S. Marshal from Dodge. Name's Dillon.
Looking for somebody?
Maybe. What's your name?
Cade. Jack Cade. This here's my wife, Ellen. It ain't us you're looking for, eh?
You live around here, Cade?
Few miles from here.
Albin Peavy, a friend of yours?
Not hardly.
Shut up, Ellen.
And if you're not friends, what are you doing here, Cade?
Man can ride where he pleases.
Sure. But when a man and his wife start out carrying rifles and are headed for Albin Peavy's place, it might be different.
You keep out of this, Marshal. Us Cades don't need no lawmen.
Who is it, Cade? Your son?
What's he know about Ben?
I told you to shut up, Ellen. I'll do the talking.
Ben, huh? Is that it, Cade? Did Peavy kill your son, Ben?
All right, you're so smart, I'll tell you. A man like Peavy don't deserve to live. He killed Ben and he stole him. Run off with his body. Man can't get lower than that.
How do you know he killed him?
I found Ben last night, that's how.
Last night?
I couldn't handle him alone, so I went home after Ellen. Then it got dark and we had to wait there till morning.
And he was gone by then.
I knew it was Albin Peavy stole him and he killed him too. But he's gonna die for it. We're gonna face him straight on and get it over with fast. Ellen's as good a shot as I am, Marshal.
Look, Cade, if Peavy killed your son, I don't blame you for being mad. But he must have had some reason for killing
him. It ain't none of your bother, Marshal. I keep telling you.
All right, I'll have to make it my bother. Don't move, Cade. You're covered. Miss Cade, you hold that rifle down or I'll have to shoot your husband.
Pretty sneaky, ain't you?
Get a rifle, Chester.
Yes, sir. All right, give it, Miss Cade.
Take it.
And I'll take yours, Cade.
Go ahead. I got another rifle.
Where?
At home. And I'll get it, too.
You're not going home, Cade.
What do you mean?
We're gonna go see the Peavies first. Like you say, we're gonna get this thing over with.
I've got L&M.
I've got L&M.
I've got L&M.
And L&M's got everything.
Best filter. No filter compares with L&M's pure, white, miracle tip for quality or effectiveness.
Best flavor. The miracle tip draws easy, lets you enjoy all the taste.
Best tobaccos. Highest quality tobaccos. Low nicotine tobaccos. L&M tobaccos.
Light and mild.
Today, buy L&M. It's sweeping the country because it's America's best filter tip cigarette. Yes, today, why don't you get L&M? Because L&M's got everything.
This is it, L&M filters.
L&M's got everything.
It's the best.
The cabin's empty, Chester.
Where have they got to?
You stay with the cage. I'm going to take a look around back.
I hope Albin Peavy shoots you, Marshal.
And I hope he doesn't. Keep an eye on him, Chester.
Yes, sir. You stand real easy now, Cade, and quiet, too.
Mr. Peavy?
What? You fetch my rifle, Liza.
No, stay where you are. Now, don't you move either, Peavy.
What'd you let him get the drop on us for?
I didn't see him.
I'm not gonna shoot anybody, Peavy. Chester! Bring him back here!
What are you up to anyways?
I want to explain something to you, Peavy, and to Jack Cade and his wife, too.
Cade?
Yeah, we met them coming over here to kill you.
I gotta get my rifle, Mike.
They're not armed. We took their rifles.
He's right, Mr. Peavy. They ain't armed.
I'll kill them with my bare hands.
You move and I'll bend my gun barrel over your head, Peavy.
Look at that, Marshal. He's burying him. Peavy's burying my boy.
Is that who it is, Peavy? Is it Ben Cade? Well, tell me.
Well, what's the difference now? It's Ben Cade.
Oh, why didn't you leave him? Why did you bring him here?
There's another grave here, Marshal. You can't see it. I fixed it so's nobody can see it.
What?
2 months ago, Ben Cade shot my son. Before he died, I promised I'd someday bury Ben nearby, and that's what I'm doing.
It's your boy's own fault he got shot. If he had been hounding Ben, it wouldn't have happened.
So that's what this feud's all about, huh?
It ain't over yet, Marshal. Peavy's gonna die for killing Ben.
Now, wait a minute, Cade. Peavy, I want to ask you something.
Well?
You were after young Cade for killing your son, is that right?
That's right.
And now he's dead, you're satisfied?
That's all I wanted. It don't matter who killed him.
And you, Cade. You're after Peavy because he shot your boy.
I'll kill him for it if it takes 10 years.
Well, you're wasting your time. The feud's over, gentlemen.
Huh?
I killed Ben Cade.
What are you talking about?
He tried to shoot me from ambush. He thought I was Peavy stalking him. So I fired back, and I must have hit him. But he didn't die till he got across that stream where you found his body.
We tracked him as far as the bank, and then I got smart and picked up a trail that come out down below. I thought it was Ben's, but of course it was Peavy's.
Yeah, true. Peavy, you didn't shoot him?
I never claimed I did. You can't blame the marshal, Kay.
No. He had to defend himself. I ain't blaming him.
I'm sorry it happened, Kay. But now maybe both of you men are ready to agree that there's been enough killing around here. What do you say, Peavy?
He's been enough for me. I'm satisfied.
What about you, Kate? What do you think?
It ought to stop now. We lost our boys. I'm thinking maybe it's right that they should be buried here like that to kind of remind us.
Kate?
Yeah, Peavy?
You leave Ben here, I guess you ought to come by once in a while.
Well, I'd want to do that. See my son's grave.
I'll take good care of it. Both of them. Marshal?
Yeah.
Maybe if my woman boils up some coffee, all you people sit down with us.
Well, thank you, Peavy. I think everybody would like that.
And now our star, William Conrad.
Thank you, George. Mild and plenty quick on the draw. That's L&M for you. And the pure white miracle tip on the business end of every L&M filters out everything but the taste of the world's finest tobaccos. All you have to do is pick up a carton of L&Ms and you'll see what I mean. L&M stands out from all the rest.
Gunsmoke, produced and directed by Norman McDonald, stars William Conrad as Matt Dillon, U.S. Marshal. Our story was specially written for Gunsmoke by John Meston, with music composed and conducted by Rex Corey. Sound patterns by Tom Hanley and Ray Kemper. Featured in the cast were Vivi Janis, John Daner, and Vic Perrin. Parley Bear is Chester. Some people tie strings around their fingers, others write themselves notes. Whatever your pet method of memory jogging may be, this is the time to remind yourself to give to the Mental Health Fund. Your gift will help your mental health association carry on its work of fighting mental illness. You'll be helping to provide more research, better hospitals. Your dollars are desperately needed for a very worthy cause. Give to your Mental Health Fund in care of your local postmaster.
Stop! Start smoking with a smile with Chesterfield. Smiling all the while with Chesterfield. Put a smile in your smoking, just give them a try. Light up a Chesterfield, they satisfy.
Put a smile in your smoking by Chesterfield. So smooth, so satisfying. Chesterfield.
You'll also enjoy Chesterfield's great radio shows. Harry Como sings all the top tunes on CBS Radio every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Jack Webb stars in Dragnet on Tuesday nights. Check your local listings. Remember, L&M Filters present another transcribed Gunsmoke program tonight at 8 Eastern Standard Time. That's right, Gunsmoke is on the air twice every Saturday. Once at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and again at 8 p.m.
That's William Conrad as Matt Dillon on Radio's Gunsmoke. And I always kind of liked the radio version better than the TV version. It had much more gritty, more realistic appeal to me anyway. Well, I want to publicize something right now since we're talking about Gunsmoke. That's one of the regular shows you can hear every day, Monday through Friday, on the Radio Theater Channel. And on Western Wednesday's segment of the week, you can hear it twice. Once earlier in the day, and then it's regular time later in the day. Check the schedule, www.oldtimeradiolisten.com, and get all the details on that and the other great shows that we have. And by the way, another show that we do have on the Theater Channel is This Is Your FBI, and we're going to play an episode of that. It's called Robert Perry Impersonator. That's from 1945.
Yes, sir?
You're John Gordon?
Yeah.
My name is Perry, government inspector.
Government? Oh, well, come on in.
Thanks.
Emily?
Yes, John?
Emily, this is Mr. Perry, government inspector.
Oh.
This is my wife.
Oh, how do you do, Mr. Perry?
Well, what can I do for you, sir?
I'm afraid I have some very bad news for you two.
What?
Bad news?
It's about those white leghorns you had delivered yesterday.
Yes?
I took a few from the crates as they were being unloaded and sent them out to the laboratory.
Oh. What's the bad news?
Well, I'm afraid we're going to have to condemn all of your chickens.
Condemn them?
Why?
Two of them showed signs of tuberculosis.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, that couldn't be.
Our reports are never wrong, Mr. Gordon.
Couldn't the chickens be treated, fixed up some way?
I'm afraid not.
What can we do, Mr. Perry?
Well, you can sue the people you bought them from, and the government service will stand behind you. Oh, by the way, have you got a lawyer?
No, we haven't any money either.
That's a shame. Well, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. You both look like honest people. I'll loan you enough to retain a lawyer.
Well, now, Mr. Perry,
let me make you out a check.
Well, now, I don't think you... Well, really, this is really very nice of you, Mr. Perry.
Mr. Perry, I don't think we ought to...
There. There's my check for $50. You can pay me when you get your money back for the chickens.
I don't know how we can thank you, Mr. Perry.
Oh, don't mention it. Oh, Mr. Gordon, have you got a man around the farm who can help me load the chickens onto my truck?
No, but I'll help you myself. Come on, Emily.
Yes.
Mr. Perry helped us. Now let's us help him.
No one was to blame because this petty crook had successfully impersonated the federal official. No one was to blame, but it was important that Robert Perry be apprehended, because his brazen theft had been a sudden catastrophe for the farmer and his wife. Had wiped out 10 years of hard work. Because women are more suspicious than men, it was Emily Gordon who telephoned the FBI. Telephoned them and told her story. A short time later, Emily and John Gordon were at the FBI's New York office.
This man impersonated a government inspector, Mr. Gordon?
Yes, sir. That's what he said he was.
You try to give me as much of a description of him as you can?
Well, he was about 40 years old.
And he was kind of stocky, John.
Yes.
How tall would you say he was?
About 5'10".
And he wore glasses.
Only when he wrote the check, Emily.
Oh, yes, I remember that.
How about his hair and his clothes? What was he wearing?
Well, had kind of brown hair. He was wearing a blue suit.
Mm-hmm.
How about the truck he was driving?
It was a 1940 Chevrolet.
How do you know so exactly?
Well, Bill Miller up the road from us has one.
See?
Mr. Perry's truck's painted brown, and he didn't have any writing on the sides.
This is really asking too much, but you didn't happen to notice the license plate number, did you?
Oh,
no.
I did. I don't know what the whole number is, but it started with a 1 and a 3 and a 5. Yes, that's it, I'm sure. 1, 3, 5.
Well, that's fine. That'll be a big help.
Hi, Dad.
Oh, come on in, Bill. Got anything?
Your hunch was right. I called the bank. No one named Robert Perry has an account there.
Say.
I guess we'd better send out a teletype.
Yes, alert all retail and wholesale chicken dealers within 100 miles. Send Perry's description and a description of the truck.
Right.
Maybe we can give Mr. Perry a little indigestion from too much chicken.
Driving too fast for you, Mom?
Oh, no, no.
Are you dozing off, Mom?
No, just thinking.
About what?
about your father. Oh, he'd have been very proud of you today, son.
Thanks, Bob.
You did a fine job. Now, isn't this better than passing checks?
Yeah, I guess it is.
Those places where you were passing checks were always looking for dishonesty. That's because they were dishonest themselves.
Uh-huh.
Yes, your father always said, if it's larceny you're thinking of, you're much better off dealing with honest people.
Yeah. One thing bothers me, though, Mom.
Huh?
When I passed a check, I had cash. Now we got chickens. What do we do with them?
Why, we drive to Waterbury and sell them. That's easy, isn't it?
Yeah, but who do we sell them to?
Now, don't worry about that.
Why, have you got a customer?
Certainly. When I was in Waterbury yesterday, I took care of that.
Oh.
Yeah, I told the man I had some chickens to sell. Told him I was closing down my farm.
Didn't he ask you why?
Yeah. I told him that my son was going into the army and I had to sell out, you see.
Mom, I guess you're the smartest mother a fella ever had.
Fortunately for the FBI and all other law enforcement agencies, the human brain has channels. And ideas tend to run along the same line time after time. It accounts for the odd fact that some thieves, like Robert Perry, love to pass bad checks. Bad checks are always returned. And this bad check was to haunt Robert Perry. For the next morning in the New York offices of the FBI, Special Agents Baker and Webster were looking at a report from Washington. A report on Robert Perry's bad check.
How far back does he go?
Over 10 years. Caught once in the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
That's how he happened to have this much of a record. Did 3 months. Since then, he's been working in spurts.
Anything else besides the bad checks?
No. It kind of puzzles me. This isn't his kind of a job. His father maybe, yes, but the old man's dead.
His father was a thief?
Yes, his mother, too.
Well...
Mr. Perry can trace his family tree all the way back to Alcatraz. Hello, Baker speaking. You have? Good, where? Waterbury. Hold on to it, we're leaving now. Come on, Bill.
What's up?
The Waterbury police have picked up Perry's truck. Grab your hat, let's get going. Hello, Sergeant. I'm Baker, New York office, FBI.
Oh, how are you?
This is Bill Webster.
Hello, Sergeant.
How do you do, sir? Well, gentlemen, somebody just called to claim the truck.
Perry?
No, a legitimate fellow.
Who is he?
A chicken dealer named Crawford from right here in Waterbury.
How did he get hold of it?
I'll let him tell you that. He's right in here. Mr. Crawford?
Yes?
Mr. Crawford, these gentlemen are special agents of the FBI.
How are you, gentlemen?
How do you do, Mr. Crawford? Would you mind telling us how you happened to get hold of that truck?
I bought it. Same time I bought the chickens.
From whom?
A real nice old lady. She came in to see me on Tuesday. Said she had to sell her farm because her son was going into the army. She reminded me of my mother.
Nice old lady. Bill.
What?
I think this nice old lady is Perry's mother.
Yes.
Mr. Crawford, this is very important. Was there a man with this nice old lady?
Yes.
Did he look about 40 years old, pretty stocky, about 5 feet 10 inches tall, wearing a blue suit? Did he have brown hair?
Yes, that's the fellow who was with her.
Where did they go?
Why, after I bought the truck, the old lady asked me if I'd drive him to the railroad station.
What train did they take?
Did she say where they were going?
They took the 521 out of here. She said they were going to New York. They're in New York by now.
Well, we better get down there before that nice old lady sells somebody the Brooklyn Bridge.
We momentarily close the file on Robert Perry, impersonator. We will return to this case in just a moment. Now, will you join the Equitable Society in a salute to the United States Merchant Marine, to the more than 100 privately operated American steamship companies, and to the bold and hardy merchant seamen who sail under the American flag. These companies and these men are the inheritors of a great tradition that goes back to the Yankee whalers from old New Bedford and Nantucket Town. They are the spiritual heirs of the daring crew that drove the tall-masted clipper ships round the Horn. And in this war, they have written new and glorious entries into the records of American seamanship. From Murmansk to the Philippines, undaunted by minefields, suicide planes, and wolf packs of submarines, they have delivered the cargoes on which our armed forces depend. Without these gallant vessels, America would have been forced to fight a defensive war. So here's to the ships and the men who operate and man them. May they be as successful in the years of peace that lie ahead as they are fearless in war. For many generations, there has been a close bond between the American Merchant Marine and the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States. Thousands of operators and sailors are members of our society. Hundreds of the ships they sail were launched from shipyards in which Equitable Society funds have long been invested. And thousands of the wartime cargoes they transport come from factories that Equitable dollars help build. For in wartime, Equitable Society dollars have been fighting dollars. And at all times, they are security dollars for you, your home, and your country. And now, back to the file on Robert Perry, impersonator.
In every case the FBI works on, the criminal has the advantage in the beginning. That advantage is the element of surprise. The criminal is the one who calls his shots. Once a crime has been committed, though, the FBI begins to move, begins to close the doors of escape. But first, they must find the criminal. In a city like New York, a city with 7 million population, it is almost impossible to find two inconspicuous people, two people like Robert Perry and his mother. It is almost impossible to locate them in New York if they are in New York. It is impossible to locate them in New York if they are, as Robert Perry and his mother were, in a small tourist cabin in southern New Jersey.
Well, Mom, the weatherman is on our side.
Yes, a beautiful day.
I think I'll go swimming.
Mr. Haskell got his delivery of chicken yesterday, son.
Oh, Mom, let's take a little rest.
Not on vacation, son.
Haskell is an apple on a tree. We can pick him whenever we want.
Your father always said strike while the iron is hot.
Oh, those were different times.
Oh, times never change in our business.
Now, look, Mom, why don't we settle down someplace?
Oh, I can't settle down.
Why not?
Well, I never want to stay in one place that long.
Oh, but you're getting older now.
Your father always said the person's as old as he feels.
Okay, I guess I better go to work then.
Son.
Huh?
I meant to talk to you.
About what?
I found a checkbook in your blue suit.
Mom, I haven't cashed a check.
There was one missing.
Oh, I gave it to that farmer up in Connecticut.
Why?
Well, I felt sorry for him. He didn't have any money to hire a lawyer.
But, son, you left a calling card. I asked you.
You asked me not to cash any checks. I didn't. I gave one away.
Well, it's done now, and your father always said there was no point in crying over spilled milk.
I'll see you later, Mom.
Robert?
Huh?
You forgot something.
What?
Come here, son. Have a good day.
It is impossible to help some people. A sign will read wet paint, but some people get paint on their clothes. A sign on the highway will read slow down, curve ahead, but some people get killed. A warning is issued by the FBI, but some people, some stubborn, self-sufficient people, get robbed. You've seen cards with a criminal's picture and his description. Those cards are called identification orders. Despite the fact that every chicken dealer in the East had gotten an identification order on Robert Perry, he was not caught. Twice in the next month, Perry and his mother worked their swindle again. In the New York offices of the FBI, Special Agents Baker and Webster were going over the latest reports.
I don't understand why those identification orders didn't work. Both farmers got them. They admitted that.
Yes, and he followed the pattern exactly both times. He's always been a government inspector, and the chicken disease has always been tuberculosis.
And don't forget Mom. Good old Mom has always sold the chickens because her son was going in the army.
I don't know how we can make it any easier for the farmers.
We can't, unless we tell them not to answer the door.
Of course, the people who got stuck are not the farmers. They got their chickens back. The legitimate chicken dealer who buys the loot, all he winds up with is a truck.
That's it.
What?
The truck. That's the angle we've been overlooking.
What about the truck?
It's a legitimate purchase every time.
You're right.
Every time Perry sells one of the trucks, he and his mother come back down to New York.
That means they're buying their trucks here.
I think we've got something, Dan.
Yes.
Got one of the Perry identification orders in your desk?
Yes, but we'll need more than one.
No, let's not take another chance that people won't read them.
What are you going to do?
I'm going to call on every second-hand truck dealer in New York.
I'll go with you.
Okay, let's move.
For 3 days, three long, weary days, Special Agents Baker and Webster interviewed truck dealers. The response was always the same. Sorry, liked to help, but never saw the man. Sorry, I never saw the man. Then, on the fourth day...
I know this is the right way to do it, Dan, but if we don't find Perry's trail pretty soon...
I know. I keep seeing secondhand trucks in my dreams.
Here's the used car lot.
Yes. I'll get out on your side.
Okay.
That looks like someone in charge.
Yes.
Yes, gentlemen?
How do you do, sir? My name is Baker. I'm from the FBI.
The FBI?
Yes. Here are my credentials.
Oh, I see.
This is Mr. Webster.
How do you do?
How do you do? If, this is an investigation of some sort, gentlemen. I run my business clean. No black market.
We're not checking on black market operations.
Take a look at this picture, Mr. Turner.
Uh-huh.
Ever see that man before?
I think so. His face is familiar. But I see so many people.
Try to remember.
If he was here, he was probably with a nice old lady.
Oh, sure. I remember them now.
You do? When were they here?
Well, let's see. Today's Friday. He was here Wednesday. That's it, Wednesday afternoon.
Did he buy a truck?
Mm-hmm. Paid me cash, too.
You're lucky.
What do you mean, lucky?
Sometimes he pays by check.
I see. No, he paid me cash, and they drove right out of here in the truck.
They didn't by any chance say where they were going.
No, they didn't. Well, now, wait a minute.
Yeah?
I'm trying to think. He asked me for the best road to Albany.
Albany?
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Turner.
Oh, not at all, sir.
Dan, let's whip down to Grand Central and grab the next train north.
Right.
A woman's place is in the home, so let's find a home for Mrs. Perry.
Albany, New York, has been an important American city since the completion of the Erie Canal in 1825. It is the capital of New York State, has a population of 561,000. It is a city of steep hills and lovely scenery. And on the outskirts of Albany, you'll find lush farmland and lots of chickens. In addition to all of these things, Albany had on this particular day, in the FBI field office, two special agents, two hard-working agents named Baker and Webster.
Hi, Bill.
Hi.
Have any luck?
No. I checked the local police, and they haven't spotted Perry's truck yet.
I went up to the Chamber of Commerce and checked all of the big chicken dealers by phone. No luck either.
Well, where do we go from here?
I think we got all the holes sealed up. Let's just wait for Perry to try to get through.
Well, maybe we'll get some help in the identification orders.
Could be. We certainly sent enough of them out.
Sometimes it looks as if the people who get the IOs must make their ads and tear them up.
Bill.
Huh?
We're missing a bet.
Well, what's that?
IOs are also put up in railroad stations. That's what made me think of it.
Think of what?
We ought to be at the railroad station, not here.
Why, to catch Perry as he's leaving town?
No, but you remember that first farmer, Gordon?
That was 1,000 years ago. What about him?
Remember, he said that Perry told him he had seen the chickens unloaded at the railroad station the day before.
Yes, and he must have been telling the truth.
That's right, otherwise he wouldn't have known about the delivery. Bill, I've got a hunch that Perry's waiting for us. Never saw this fellow, huh?
Nope. We don't let anybody hang around this platform unless they got business here, Mr. Baker.
Have you had any really big deliveries of chickens the last few days?
Well, I guess so. I have to look it up.
From Thursday on.
Thursday, huh? Well, let's see. Well, here's one. There's a couple here. There's another batch here. Mm-hmm. Two more here. Let's see, that's 15 altogether.
Let's copy down the names and addresses of the farmers.
Right, then we'll make a tour. If we get lucky...
We're overdue.
If we can only get lucky, we'll be waiting when Perry knocks on the door.
And that's one date I don't want to stand up.
Well, it worked again, Mom.
It'll work every time, son. It's foolproof.
This last one was the softest touch yet.
Yeah, and they're the best-looking chickens we've gotten, too.
What do you say we take a little vacation after this one, Mom?
All right, son.
Good. Where'll we go?
Oh, Niagara Falls. I wanted to go there with your father, but he was always too tied up with business.
Not Niagara Falls, Mom.
Well, why not, son? It's lovely up there. I've seen the postcards.
Buffalo Cops, Mom. I'm hot up there.
Oh, yes, I forgot.
Well, there are plenty of other places.
Yeah, of course.
How about California? I'd like to go there.
Oh, no. No, I'd always be thinking about your father if we went to California. He was at San Quentin.
Well, we've got time to think about that after we get back to New York.
You know, I think we ought to stay right in New York.
Why?
Well, the papers have been saying that it's unpatriotic to take long trips by train. They need the space for soldiers.
Maybe you're right. Maybe we'll stay in New York.
Well, that car, it's forcing us off the road. Be careful, son.
It's not forcing us off the road, Mom. They want us to stop.
Well, have you been speeding?
No, Mom.
Pull over, Perry.
Okay.
Well, what in the world is this, son?
Come out of there, Perry. You too, Mrs. Perry.
Well, who are you?
Special agents of the FBI.
Well, what do you want with us?
Well, you and your son seem to like chicken so much, we're going to do you a favor.
Well, what is it?
We're going to arrange for you to be sent to an institution, a place where they have chicken every Sunday.
Robert Perry and his mother, like all criminals, thought they had a foolproof scheme. A racket that was beyond being broken by the forces of law and order. Robert Perry and his mother were petty thieves, but they showed the same contempt for decency that all criminals show. The FBI gives every effort to each of its causes, no matter how small, because it knows that the one sure way to prevent crimes is to stop them from being committed. And it knows, too, that the one way to do that, the one sure way, is to keep apprehending criminals, to keep advertising what the FBI has proven time and time again, that crime does not pay. When every child knows that, when he knows it the way he knows that 2 and 2 make 4, then crime will stop. Until that day, the FBI will stay on the job.
Case in just a minute, but now... Will you join the Equitable Society in a tribute to the victory which is near at hand? A tribute of gratitude and praise to the armed forces of the United States. Our fighting men have proved that free men, brought up in the ways of peace, are more than a match for the regimented millions of the aggressor nations. The victory of these representatives of democracy is, as President Truman said last night, and I quote, more than a victory of arms. It is, as he said, a victory of one way of life over another. A victory of an ideal founded on the rights of the common man, on the dignity of the human being, and on the conception of the state as the servant, not the master of its people. Tomorrow, let us hope a new era will dawn on this earth, an era in which goodwill will prevail among all men, and all men will work together for the peace and prosperity of the world. As its contribution to peace, the Equitable Society will concentrate its full resources on the great task of providing security and jobs for the men and women who have served their country so well.
Robert Perry and his mother were convicted in a federal court, and both of them were sentenced to serve time in the federal penitentiary.
The incidents used in tonight's broadcast are taken from the files of the Federal Bureau of Investigation. However, all names used are fictitious, and any similarity thereof to the names of persons living or dead is accidental. Programs in this series of particular interest to servicemen and women are broadcast overseas through the worldwide facilities of the Armed Forces Radio Service. Tonight, the music was under the direction of Frederick Steiner, the author was Jerry Lewis, your narrator was Frank Lovejoy. This is Your FBI, is a Jerry Devine production. And now this is Carl Frank, speaking for the Equitable Life Assurance Society of the United States, and inviting you to tune in again next week at this same time, for This is Your FBI. This is the American Broadcasting Company.
We'll wrap up this week's podcast with a new entry to the Radio Theater Channel's lineup. It's the Abbott and Costello Show, and this is Grade School from 1944.
The Abbott and Costello program, brought to you by Camel, the cigarette that's first in the service according to actual sales records. See if your throat and your taste don't make Camel a first with you, too. Find out for yourself. Listen to the great rhythms of Freddie Rich and his orchestra, the swingy singing of Connie Haynes, and that lad whose message loud and clear each Thursday rings into your ear.
All right, Costello, come here. You're all excited.
I like me.
You're all excited. What's the thing you've got there?
Huh?
It looks like a telegram. Where did you get it?
Oh, a fellow in a long green underwear gave it to me.
A fellow in a long green underwear?
Yeah, he was wearing a Western Union suit.
Why, yeah, dummy, that was a messenger boy. And that's a telegram. What does it say?
It don't say nothing, Abbott. I can't see a thing.
Well, you dope, you haven't even opened the envelope.
Oh, do you have to open it? I thought you were supposed to peek through this little window in the front.
Give me that telegram. I'll read it. Hey, look, Costello. What? It's from your hometown.
Paterson, New Jersey?
Paterson, New Jersey.
Oh, boy!
Can you imagine? Look, it says, Dear Lewis Costello.
Oh, yeah. Abbott, look at the way they spell Lewis.
What do you mean?
L-O-U-S-C. that's my hometown.
Quiet, Costello. This telegram is from your old grade school in Paterson, Public School 15.
Oh, boy. Good old PS-15. My old alma mattress.
No. No, you mean alma mater. A mattress is something you lie on.
I know. I laid around that school for 10 years. what do they want with me, Abbott?
Well, the telegram goes on to say, let's see now. We are proud of you, Mr. Costello, and the whole school will greatly be honored if you would come to Paterson this Saturday night and appear in our annual school play, signed by the principal, J. Soiloff Wallpaper.
How do you like that, Abbott? Boy, oh boy, I knew my old school would send for me someday.
Sure they would.
I was always the hero of my school. I'll never forget Coach Abel Green.
What do you mean?
And those kids I played with, Michael Varello.
What did they do?
Those were the kids. We had a real team in that. I was even the captain of the tug-of-war team.
Wait a minute. What did you do on the tug-of-war team?
I was the second jerk from the end.
Yes, but I can't...
I don't get that.
I don't either. Look, I can't understand why that school would send for you to appear in a play. What do you know about grammar?
About what?
Do you understand grammar?
No, not since she got a new false teeth.
No.
Even Grandpa can't understand her.
Now, Costello, I'm talking about dramatic acting. Did you ever do anything dramatic in school?
Oh, did I? I used to get up, and I used to excite poetry.
You did?
Get a load of this little gem, which I wrote myself.
Let's hear it.
And roses are red, and violets are purple. Sugar is sweet, and so is maple syrup.
Come on.
Maple syrup, it rhymes, darn it.
Well, what about it? But maple syrup, what is that?
What is maple syrup?
What is maple syrup?
Maple syrup is the stuff you put on flannel cakes.
Okay, look. Talk sense now. If you're going to Paterson, New Jersey, we've got to get down to the railroad station right away. Come on.
Okay, come on.
Red cab, order.
Taxi, taxi.
All right now, Costello, let's get our tickets for Patterson. We've got to find a comfortable place to sleep on the train.
Oh, I never have any trouble, Abbott. I got a system. I eat garlic before I get on a train.
What has garlic got to do with finding a place to sleep?
I just breathe in the conductor's face, and he gives me a wide berth.
Be sensible. Well, here's the ticket window. I beg your pardon, sir. We're going to Patterson. Could you tell us how the trains run?
Oh, yes. There's a big black thing that pulls them, and it goes choo-choo and woo-hoo!
This guy's been drinking too much of that traveler's aid.
Look. You better let me handle this, Costello.
I think I better because I lost my place.
All right, never mind that. Look, in order to say Lou, come here.
Go ahead, I got it.
All right, look, I'll take care of everything. Don't worry about a thing. In order to save money, I think we'd better get a couple of upper berths.
Oh, but I don't want an upper, I want a lower.
But Costello, do you realize that if you buy a lower, you'll find it's much higher than an upper?
Oh, sure, I mean, after all, what'd you say?
I said that a lower is higher than an upper.
A lower is higher than an upper?
Why, certainly.
Well, what are they doing, running the trains upside down?
Of course not. The lower is a more desirable berth. Therefore, if you want to go lower, you'll have to go higher.
If I want to go lower, I'll have to go higher?
Yeah.
Why should I go higher when I want to go lower?
Simply because if you want to go lower, you have to go higher. Because the lower is higher than the upper. And the reason the lower is higher than the upper is because the upper is higher up than the lower.
Oh! You mean that the upper is lower than the lower because the lower is higher than the upper?
Now, you've got it.
Now, I've got it. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
Costello, I'm trying to tell you that they sell the upper lower than the lower because when you sleep in an upper, you have to get up to go to bed.
I have to get up to go to bed?
That's right.
Who's paying for my berth?
You are.
And there ain't going to be anybody in it but me?
No.
Then why do I have to get up?
Costello, look, I've already explained it. Unless you go higher for a lower, then you're stuck with an upper. And you'll have to get up when you go to bed. And you'll have to get down when you want to get up.
Abbott.
What?
Let me smell your breath.
Oh!
Friends, would you like to do me a... Well, I was just about to say, do me a favor, but actually, I should say, do yourself a favor. Or maybe do your throat and your taste a flavor. Let them judge for themselves which cigarette best agrees with them. Let them answer the question you have so often asked yourself about which cigarette is best for you. Let your throat try Camel's kind, cool mildness. Let your taste sample that rich, full flavor. Because your T-zone, that's T for taste and T for throat, can tell you more about Camels in one puff than I can in 10 programs.
C-A-M-E-L-S.
Camels, a superb blend of costlier tobaccos. Freddie Rich plays the hit tune of today, but for many of you, it is also a hit of other years. Freddie revives Sweet and Lovely.
Thank you.
you are, Costello, in good old Paterson, New Jersey.
Yeah, Abbott. And here's my old school.
Do tell.
PS-15. As I stand here looking at this old building, I think of the happy days I spent here as a boy.
How long did you go to school, Costello?
You mean counting kindergarten?
Yes.
1 year.
Well, come on, let's find the principal's office and see what time we start rehearsing for the school play tonight.
Hey, what do you mean? What time we start rehearsing? Not we, me. This is my old school, not yours, Abbott.
What do you mean?
I'm going to do this play all by myself. I don't need your help.
Oh, how can you say that, Costello? Haven't I always given you the best of everything? Why, last Sunday, when we had a double date, I gave you the best girl. What a slick little number you had.
Slick number is right. I bent her back in my arms and her hair slid off.
All right, look. Just cut that out, Costello. Wait a minute. I think this is the principal's office right here.
No, not that room.
What do you mean?
No, that room is where they have the art class.
What do you mean?
That's where I learned to draw, Abbott.
You did?
I was a wonderful drawer. My kid brother Sebastian is in there now. He's studying to be a drawer, too.
Well, that'll be nice.
Just think of it. The Costello brothers. A pair of drawers.
Look, never mind that. Where is the principal's office?
Oh, I don't quite remember, Abbott. But look. Here's my old first grade's room.
First grade room?
Yeah.
Hey, well, why don't you go in and say hello to your old teacher?
Oh, I don't think Miss Sashwaite would remember me. I wonder if she's as fat as she used to be.
Why, was she very fat?
Fat. Every time she turned around, she used to erase the back blackboard.
I
said it!
All right. Well, go ahead. Open the door and see if she remembers you after all these years.
Okay. Boy, will she be surprised to see me. Miss Sashwaite!
Yes?
Don't you remember me? I'm Lou Costello.
Oh, and where were you all day yesterday?
Yesterday? I haven't been here for 15 years.
If you're absent one more day, you'll have to bring a note from your mother.
Just a minute, Miss Sashwaite. I'm Lou Costello. Don't you remember how 15 years ago I always used to pester you by raising my hand?
Yes.
Well?
You can go now.
Gee, Miss Sashwaite. Gee, she's changed. I remember when she used to keep me after school to spank her erasers.
All right, look. Come on, Costello. Here's the principal's office right over here. And you'd better let me talk to him. He's a very brilliant man.
Go ahead.
How do you do, sir? Are you Professor Wallpaper, the principal?
Yeah.
Oh, you can always tell a Harvard man.
Professor, I understand you want Costello to appear in your school play tonight.
Yeah, just a minute. I got the telephone tangled in my yo-yo. Now, if you fellas are looking for the rehearsal of the play, it's right in the next room.
Oh, all right. Come on, Costello.
Oh, I love you, Millicent, my darling.
I love you too, Rodney. Kiss me, my sweet.
Oh. Hey, you two, cut that out!
Shh, wait a minute, don't stop them, Costello. That's wonderful acting.
They're not acting. That's the janitor and the fourth grade teacher.
Oh, this is ridiculous. Can anybody tell us where they're rehearsing the play, please?
Yeah, right in the next room. Just ask for the English teacher. He's in charge.
Thanks.
Oh, I love you, Millicent, my darling.
I love you too, Rodney. Kiss me, my sweet.
Hey, Abbott, they've been doing that for 15 years.
Why don't they get together?
Well, she won't marry him when he's drunk, and he won't marry her when he's sober.
Yes, teacher, I'm a dandy.
Kitzel, don't tell me that you're teaching in this school, too.
Yeah, could be, yes. You know, I'm devoting my whole life to teaching the little kiddies how to speak perfectly the King's English. Yes, I went to one of the most famous colleges in England.
Eton?
Yeah, Eton and Brinkham. Hoo-hoo. I had a wonderful time.
I was in London once.
Yeah?
I met a beautiful girl on the street one day.
Piccadilly?
I certainly did.
He certainly did. I don't get it.
Look, Kitzel, I understand you're directing the school play tonight.
Yes, I am, my friend. You know, my whole family was dramatic coaches. My grandfather was a coach, my father was a coach, my uncle was a coach. Oh, I come from a long line of coaches.
And what are you, the caboose?
Well, gentlemen, I'll see you tonight at the play. Now I must get back to my pupil.
Just a minute, Kitzel, yes? Just a minute. Is my
kid brother Sebastian in your English class?
Is that little Sebastian your brother? Woo-hoo! Is he a bright little chappy? You know, he is speaking the best English from the whole school. Just a second, I'll call him. Sebastian!
Hello, Sebastian. Hello. I just wanted to tell you how proud I am of you. Professor Kitzel just told me that you're the best English pupil in his whole class. Is that true?
Yeah, could be.
Lovely Connie Haynes and a lovely song together.
The land together, laughed at the rain together, sang love's refrain together.
Sure is a wonderful triumph of modern science, but as yet we haven't found out how to broadcast the flavor of a cigarette over a microphone. Only your own taste can tell you which cigarette you like best, and only your own throat can tell you which cigarette likes you best. So why not give your T-zone, that's T for throat and T for taste, a chance to judge the cigarette it likes best. Give your taste a chance to try the rich, full flavor of Camel's blend of costlier tobaccos. Give your throat the chance to try Camel's kind, cool mildness. Like millions of smokers, you too may find that your cigarette is...
C-A-M-E-L-S.
Camel's. Let them tell their own story to your own T-Zone today.
Good evening, members of the Parents and Teachers Club of Patterson, and all you dirty, dear little kitties. We have a great surprise for you tonight. One of our former pupils, Lou Costello, has consented to present a play for us. Most of you remember Lou Costello. In his school days, he was the head boy along this block. And let us listen to this blockhead.
Costello, Costello, the audience is waiting for you. You've just been introduced. Open this door.
Here I am, Uncle Bud.
Sebastian, what are you doing in your brother's makeup and his costume? What is the meaning of this?
Louis has disappeared.
Disappeared?
Mm-hmm. But don't worry, Uncle Bud.
What do you mean?
I'm going out on the stage and I'm going to take his place. And the audience will never know the difference. I'll put on this big, big putty nose that I got, and I'll put on my nose, this big putty nose.
But, Sebastian, you've got the putty down over the end of your nose. How are you going to smell?
All right, unless they turn on the heat.
Look, Sebastian, what are you going to do when you get out on that stage?
Well,
I'm going to tell him a story about Romeo and Juliet. And it was written by William Shakespeare, a very great ether.
Ether?
Mm-hmm.
You mean author. Ether puts people asleep.
That's what the story's going to do.
Bill, all right, as long as Lou isn't here, I suppose you'll have to do it. Okay, come on, hurry up. The curtain's going up. Come on, there you are.
Thank you. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. I'm about to tell you the story of Romeo and Juliet. Now, I don't want any interruptions from you, Uncle Abbott.
Go ahead, let
me
hear the story.
My big brother told me how you interrupt him.
Oh, well, go ahead.
But don't interrupt me.
Tell a story.
Don't give me that.
Go ahead.
I lost my place like my big brother. Now, I'm not kidding. Once upon a time, there was a fella named Romeo.
Romeo? What did this Romeo look like?
I got out of that one.
Well, all right, what did he look like?
Huh?
What did he look like?
Well, he was about... How do I know what he looked like? I never met the guy.
Then why do you tell stories about people you don't even know?
Nobody knows Romeo. He's just a guy in a story. He's an imaginary character.
Oh, you mean he's just a person in fancy.
In fancy? In fancy what?
In fancy nothing.
That's a good way to catch gold. Now, look, Uncle Bud, if you'll just shut up, I'll tell a story.
All right, go ahead. I won't say any more.
Okay.
All right, go ahead.
Once upon a time, there was a fellow named Romeo, and he was his father's only son.
Well, that's right. He was his father's heir.
His what?
His father's heir.
His father didn't have any hair. He was bald-headed.
All right, go ahead.
Now, don't interrupt me.
All right, go ahead.
Now, there's a girl in the story, and her name is Juliet. And her father was giving a big party, you know, to kind of, sort of, shove her into society.
Oh, you mean she was making her debut.
I don't know if it was a debut or her night view. All I know, it was her first party and a lot of people was invited to see her and stuff. Things.
The folks were coming in to her coming out party.
How can you come in to come out? She was inside already.
Naturally, she had to come in to come out.
What does she want to come out for? She was inside. This wasn't an outdoor affair.
All right.
This was inside.
I know that. You told me that. All right.
Well, if people are going to come in to come out, there's no use of going out to come in.
All right.
Why don't they stay home?
Look, Sebastian, you don't understand.
Why don't you stay home?
Look, you don't understand, Sebastian.
I should stay home.
Now, listen, please. You want me to tell your big brother on you?
Anybody got lozenges?
Listen, please. Look, the party brings her out.
The party brings her out.
That's right.
Why should the party bring her out? What did the little girl do?
No.
The party didn't even start. Some guy right away wants to drag her out.
No, you don't understand.
Why don't they leave the little kid alone?
Now, Sebastian.
Maybe she wasn't drinking.
But, listen, Sebastian.
Maybe she had one popsicle.
Now, Sebastian.
Maybe after all, the kid is okay.
Yeah, all right.
Lost again.
All right, go on with the story. Well, wasn't Romeo invited to this party?
Talk longer!
Look, wasn't Romeo invited to this party is what I want to know, wasn't he?
Oh, sure! Oh, that... Sure. No, you see, Juliet's father... Thank you, Mr. Bernard. Juliet's father... I need him!
Now, come on, Sebastian.
Juliet's father didn't like Romeo, yes. So he had to put on a mask, and he borrowed another guy's clothes, and he went away.
Oh, Romeo went in disguise.
Yeah. In disguise clothes.
I see. All right.
You see, Uncle Buck, Romeo and Juliet's fathers was enemies, and they was fighting for 15 years.
They didn't like each other.
Yeah.
Which family brought on the feud?
They both brought on the feud, but Romeo wouldn't eat it. He was lovesick. He kept getting thin and pale.
Oh, I see. He looked wan.
Oh, yeah. What'd you say?
I said, he looked wan. Don't you know what wan is?
Yeah, wan is the number before two.
No.
1, 2, a bottom my shell.
No. Wan means picket. Romeo was picket.
Oh, sure. He was picket through the keyhole at Juliet.
Now, Sebastian.
Well, if I was there, I'd have picket out of her myself.
Sebastian, will you please go on with the play?
Well, anyway, every night Juliet used to sit on the balcony.
Why did she sit in the balcony?
Because she couldn't afford a seat in the orchestra.
All right.
And she liked to sit in the balcony.
All right, now, don't argue.
Up there she could smoke.
Oh, yeah, I understand.
Put her feet on the rail.
Yes, go ahead.
So far, so good.
Go ahead.
One night, I hope I can hold out.
All
One
right.
night, Juliet dropped her handkerchief, and Romeo picked it up and handed it to her.
And what did Juliet do when Romeo handed her the handkerchief?
She'd done like anybody else.
What? Just what?
Well, you know what
I mean. Do you know the story, don't you?
Yes, she...
Well, what did Juliet do when Romeo handed her the handkerchief?
You know, like they always...
What did she do?
She wiped her nose!
All right, now.
Gee, did you have to make me say
that? Well, all right, never mind.
I mean, it's your line.
All right, But look, Sebastian, as I remember the story, Romeo had a rival and they fought a duel with lances. Now, what I can't understand is why did the other fella kick Romeo when Romeo dropped his lance?
Because he caught Romeo with his lance down.
Look, that's enough, Sebastian. Stop the play. Stop it. I say, ladies and gentlemen, the play is over. Bring down the curtain.
Hey. What's the idea of stopping the play, Uncle Bud?
Sebastian, you ought to be ashamed of yourself. Not only have you disgraced your brother Lou, but you stand there and make a monkey out of a great masterpiece. You ridicule Romeo and Juliet, the greatest love story of all time, and you deliberately insult the name of William Shakespeare. Why do you do these wicked things?
Oh, I'm a bad boy!
Yeah, I'll say you're a bad boy.
Oh, I'm the kind of kid my mother won't let me associate with.
You certainly are. Now, come here. Now, where is your brother Lou?
I think he might be in the fourth grade classroom, Uncle Bud.
What makes you think that?
Because I locked him in there before the show.
Sebastian, unlock that door and let your brother out. He's probably in there crying his eyes out because he missed the play. Go on, open that door.
Okay, Uncle Bud.
Go ahead.
I love you, Millicent, my darling.
And I love you too, Costello. Kiss me, my sweet.
Costello, what are you doing making love with a fourth grade teacher? You know she's the janitor's girl.
You're telling me, Abbott, and I'm the new janitor.
But you missed the whole play.
Oh, don't worry, Abbott. Millicent and I are going to put on another play tomorrow night.
Another play?
Yeah, and I'm calling it The Girl Who Eloped with the New Janitor or Gone with the Window Cleaner.
I love you, Costello, my sweet.
I love you too, Millicent, my sweet.
Oh, he's a bad boy!
Abbott and Costello will be back in a moment.
Thanks to the Yanks of the Week, tonight we salute Technical Sergeant George James H. Logan of Luling, Texas, who is one of only two men in this war to receive both the Congressional Medal of Honor and the Distinguished Service Cross. In your honor, Sergeant James M. Logan, the makers of Camels are sending to our fighters overseas 400,000 Camel cigarettes.
Each of the three Camel radio shows honors a Yank of the Week by sending free 400,000 Camel cigarettes overseas, a total of more than 1 million Camels sent free each week. In this country, the Camel caravans traveling from camp to camp have thanked audiences of more than 4 million Yanks with free shows and free Camels. Camel broadcasts go out to the United States 3 times a week, are rebroadcast to our men overseas and to South America. Listen tomorrow to Jimmy Durante and Gary Moore. Monday to Bob Hawke in Thanks to the Yanks. And next Thursday to Abbott and Costello. And before we hear from the boys, I'd like to say the Merchant Marine needs more men to man the supply lines to victory. And to eligible men, it offers not only a well-paid and worthy present, but a splendid future. In 6 months' time now, you can make the progress it would have taken you 3 years to make before Pearl Harbor. Get all the facts. Go to any United States Employment Service office or wire collect to the United States Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C. And now, here are Bud and Lou Costello with a final word.
Thanks, Ken. But it's getting a little late, so all we'll have time to say is just good night, folks.
And good night to everybody.
Good night
to... bye, Bonds.
Bye, Bonds. Good night, folks.
Good night to everybody in Patterson, New Jersey.
Good night, neighbors. Good night, neighbors.
Be sure to tune in next week for another great Abbott and Costello show. And remember, try Camels on your throat and your taste. See for yourself how Camels' mildness, coolness, and flavor click with you. If you are a hermit living in some lonely cave, don't listen to this. Because you're one of the few men in the world who can pack his pipe with any old tobacco he pleases and get away with it. But if you want your pipe to make a hit with people around you as well as yourself, then load up with Prince Albert. That wonderful fragrance, that aged-in-the-wood aroma, gives your pipe real pipe appeal to other folks as well as yourself.
Besides that fragrance, Prince Albert has a rich, full-bodied yet mild flavor. It's no-bite treated for tongue gentleness. It's crimp cut to pack, draw, and burn perfectly. And what a bargain. Just about 50 pipefuls in one regular 2-ounce package. More pipes smoke Prince Albert than any other tobacco in the world.
The Abbott and Costello Show for Camel Cigarettes will be back at this very same time next week. Don't miss it. This is Ken Niles in Hollywood wishing you a pleasant good night.
Once again, it's time to say goodbye, but we'll be back next week with some more great old-time radio, and I know you're going to make it, so we'll see you then.